and a sharing against pain and sorrow and defeat. But, Mike, it is not a goodness to laugh at people. No, but I was not laughing at the little monkey. I was laughing at us, people. And suddenly I knew I was people and could not stop laughing. He paused. This is hard to explain because you have never lived as a Martian, for all that I've told you about it. On Mars, there is never anything to laugh at. All the things that are funny to us humans either cannot happen on Mars or are not permitted to happen. Sweetheart, what you call freedom doesn't exist on Mars. Everything is planned by the old ones. Or the things that do happen on Mars, which we laugh at here on Earth, aren't funny because there is no wrongness about them. Death, for example. Death isn't funny. Then why are there so many jokes about death? Chill with us humans. Death is so sad that we must laugh at it. All those religions, they contradict each other on every other point, but each one is filled with ways to help people be brave enough to laugh, even though they knew they are dying. He stopped, and Jill could feel that he had almost gone into a trance. Jill, is it possible that I was searching them the wrong way? Could it be that every one of all religions is true? Huh? How could that be? Mike, if one is true, then the others are wrong. So, point to the shortest direction around the universe. It doesn't matter where you point, it's the shortest. And you're pointing back at yourself. Well, what does that prove? You taught me the true answer, Mike. Thou art God. And thou art God, my lovely. But that prime fact, which doesn't depend on faith, may mean that all faiths are true. Well, if they're all true, then right now I want to worship Shiva. Jill changed the subject with emphatic action. Little pagan, he said softly, they'll run you out of San Francisco. But we're going to Los Angeles, where it won't be noticed. Oh, thou art Shiva. Dance, Kali, dance. During the night she woke and saw him standing at the window, looking out over the city. Trouble, my brother? He turned. There's no need for them to be so unhappy. Darling, darling, I had better take you home. The city is not good for you, but I would still know it. Pain and sickness and hunger and fighting. There's no need for any of it. It's as foolish as those little monkeys. Yes, darling, but it's not your fault. Ah, but it is. Well, that way, yes. But it's not just this one city. It's 5 billion people and more. You can't help 5 billion people. I wonder. He came over and sat by her. I grok them now. I can talk to them, Jill. I could set up our act and make the Marks laugh every minute, I'm certain. Then why not do it? Patty would be pleased, and so would I. I liked being with it, and now that we've shared water with Patty, it would be like being home. He didn't answer. Jill felt his mind and knew that he was contemplating, trying to grok. She waited. Jill, what do I have to do to be ordained? Part 4. His Scandalous Career. Chapter 30. The first mixed load of colonists reached Mars. 6 of 17 survivors of 23 originals returned to Earth. Prospective colonists trained in Peru at 16,000 feet. The president of Argentina moved one night to Montevideo, taking 2 suitcases. The new presidente started an extradition process before the High Court to yank him back. Or at least the suitcases. Last rites for Alice Douglas were held privately in the National Cathedral with 2,000 attending. Commentators praised the fortitude with which the Secretary General took his bereavement. A 3-year-old named Inflation, carrying 126 pounds, won the Kentucky Derby, paying 54 for one. 2 guests of the Colony Air Hotel, Louisville, discorporated, one voluntarily, one by heart failure. A bootleg edition of the unauthorized biography, The Devil and Reverend Foster, appeared throughout the United States. and by nightfall every copy was burned and plates destroyed, along with damage to chattels and real estate, plus mayhem, maiming, and simple assault. The British Museum was rumored to possess a copy of the first edition, untrue, and also the Vatican Library, true, but available only to church scholars. In the Tennessee legislature, a bill was introduced to make pi equal to 3. It was reported out by the Committee on Public Education and Morals, passed without objection by the lower house, and died in the upper house. An interchurch fundamentalist group opened offices in Van Buren, Arkansas, to solicit funds to send missionaries to the Martians. Dr. Jubal Harshaw made a donation, but sent it in the name and with the address of the editor of the New Humanist, rabid atheist, and his close friend. Otherwise, Jubal had little to cheer him. Too much news about Mike. He treasured the visits home of Jill and Mike, and was most interested in Mike's progress, especially after Mike developed a sense of humor. But they seldom came home now, and Jubal did not relish the latest developments. It had not troubled Jubal when Mike was run out of Union Theological Seminary, pursued by a pack of enraged theologians, some of whom were angry because they believed in God, and others because they did not, but unanimous in detesting the man from Mars. Jubal reckoned anything that happened to a theologian, short of breaking him on the wheel, as no more than meat. And the experience was good for the boy. He'd know better next time. Nor had he been troubled when Mike, with the help of Douglas, enlisted under an assumed name in the Federation Armed Forces. He had been sure that no sergeant could cause Mike permanent distress, and Jubal was not troubled by what might happen to Federation troops. An unreconciled old reactionary, Jubal had burned his honorable discharge and all that went with it the day the United States ceased having its own forces. Jubal was surprised at how little shambles Mike created as Private Jones, and how long he lasted, almost 3 weeks. Mike crowned his military career by grabbing the question period following a lecture to preach the uselessness of force, with comments on the desirability of reducing surplus population through cannibalism, then offered himself as a test animal for any weapon of any nature to prove that force was not only unnecessary, but impossible when attempted against a self-disciplined person. They did not take his offer. They kicked him out. Douglas allowed Jubal to see a super-secret, eyes-only, numbered one-of-three report after cautioning Jubal that no one, not even the Supreme Chief of Staff, knew that Private Jones was the man from Mars. Jubal scanned the exhibits, mostly conflicting reports as to what happened when Jones had been trained in the uses of weapons. The surprising thing to Jubal was that some witnesses had the courage to state under oath that they had seen weapons disappear. The last paragraph Jubal read carefully. Conclusion. Subject man is a natural hypnotist and could conceivably be useful in intelligence, but he is unfitted for any combat branch. However, his low intelligence quotient, moron, his extremely low general classification score, and his paranoid tendencies, delusions of grandeur, make it inadvisable to exploit his idiot savant talent. Recommendation, discharge, inaptitude. No pension credit, no benefits. Mike had managed to have fun. At parade on his last day, while Mike's platoon was passing in review, the commanding general and his staff were buried hip-deep in a bucolic end product, symbolic to all soldiers, but no longer common on parade grounds. This deposit vanished, leaving nothing but an odor and a belief in mass hypnosis. Jubal decided that Mike had atrocious taste in practical jokes. Then he recalled an incident in medical school involving a cadaver and the dean. Jubal had worn rubber gloves, and a good thing, too. Jubal enjoyed Mike's inglorious military career because Jill spent the time at home. When Mike came home after it was over, he hadn't seemed hurt by it. He boasted to Jubal that he had obeyed Jill's wishes and hadn't disappeared anybody, merely a few dead things. Although, as Mike grokked it, there had been times when Earth could have been made a better place if Jill didn't have this weakness. Jubal didn't argue. He had a lengthy better dead list himself. Mike's unique ways of growing up were all right. Mike was unique. But this last thing, the Reverend Dr. Valentine M. Smith, ABDD, PhD, founder and pastor of the Church of All Worlds, Incorporated, Gad, it was bad enough that the boy decided to be a holy Joe instead of leaving other people's souls alone as a gentleman should. But these diploma mill degrees, Jubal wanted to throw up. The worst was that Mike claimed that he had hatched the idea from something Jubal had said about what a church was and what it could do. Jubal admitted that it was something he could have said, although he did not recall it. Mike had been cagey about the operation. Some months of residence at a very small, very poor sectarian college, a bachelor's degree awarded by examination, a call to their ministry, followed by ordination in this recognized, though flat-headed sect, a doctor's dissertation on comparative religion, which was a marvel of scholarship while ducking any conclusions, the award of the earned doctorate, coinciding with an endowment, anonymous to this very hungry school, the second doctorate, honorary, for contributions to interplanetary knowledge from a university that should have known better, when Mike let it be known that such was his price for appearing at a conference on solar system studies. The man from Mars had turned down everybody from Caltech to Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in the past. Harvard could not resist the bait. Well, they were as crimson as their banner now, Jubal thought cynically. Mike put in a few weeks as assistant chaplain at his church mouse alma mater, then broke with the sect in a schism and founded his own church. Completely kosher, legally airtight, as venerable in precedent as Martin Luther, and as nauseating as last week's garbage. Jubal was called out of his sour daydream by Miriam.
Boss, company.
Jubal looked up to see a car about to land.
Larry, fetch my shotgun. I swore I would shoot the next dolt who landed on the rose bushes.
He's landing on the grass, boss. Tell him to try again. We'll get him on the next pass.
Looks like Ben Caxton.
So it is.
Hi, Ben. What'll you drink?
Nothing, you professional bad influence. Need to talk to you, Jubal.
You're doing it.
Dorcas, fetch Ben a glass of warm milk. He's sick.
Without much soda, amended Ben. And milk the bottle with the three dimples.
Private talk, Jubal.
All right, up to my study. Although, if you can keep anything from the kids around here, let me in on your method.
After Ben finished greeting properly, and unsanitarily in three cases, members of the family, they moseyed upstairs. Ben said,
"What the deuce? Am I lost?"
"Oh, you haven't seen the new wing. Two bedrooms and another bath downstairs. And up here, my gallery.
Enough statues to fill a graveyard."
"Please, Ben, statues are dead politicians. This is sculpture. Please speak in a reverent tone, lest I become violent."
"Here are replicas of some of the greatest sculpture this naughty globe has produced."
"Well, that hideous thing I've seen before. But when did you acquire the rest of this ballast?"
Jubal spoke to the replica of La Belle aux Lumières.
"Do not listen, ma petite chère. He is a barbarian and knows no better."
He put his hand to her beautiful, ravaged cheek, then gently touched one empty, shrunken dug.
"I know how you feel. It can't be much longer. Patience, my lovely."
He turned to Caxton and said briskly, "Ben, you will have to wait while I give you a lesson in how to look at sculpture. You've been rude to a lady. I don't tolerate that."
"Huh? Don't be silly, Jubal. You're rude to ladies. Live ones a dozen times a day."
Jubal shouted,
"Anne, upstairs. Wear your cloak."
"You know I wouldn't be rude to the old woman who posed for that. What I can't understand is a so-called artist having the gall to pose somebody's great-grandmother in her skin, and you having the bad taste to want it around."
Anne came in, cloaked.
Jubal said, "Anne, have I ever been rude to you, or to any of the girls?"
"That calls for opinion."
"That's what I'm asking for. You're not in court."
"You have never been rude to any of us, Jubal."
"Have you ever known me to be rude to a lady?"
"I have seen you be intentionally rude to a woman. I've never seen you be rude to a lady."
"One more opinion. What do you think of this bronze?"
Anne looked at Rodin's masterpiece, said slowly,
"When I first saw it, I thought it was horrible. But I've come to the conclusion that it may be the most beautiful thing I've ever seen."
"Thanks, that's all."
She left.
"Want to argue, Ben?"
"Huh? When I argue with Anne, that day I turn in my suit. But I don't grok it.
Attend me, Ben. Anybody can see a pretty girl. An artist can look at a pretty girl and see the old woman she will become. A better artist can look at an old woman and see the pretty girl she used to be. A great artist can look at an old woman, portray her exactly as she is, and force the viewer to see the pretty girl she used to be. More than that, he can make anyone with the sensitivity of an armadillo see that this lovely young girl is still alive, prisoned inside her ruined body. He can make you feel the quiet, endless tragedy that there was never a girl born who ever grew older than 18 in a heart, no matter what the merciless hours have done. Look at it, Ben. Growing old doesn't matter to you and me, but it does to them. Look at her. Ben looked at her. Presently, Jubal said gruffly, "All right, blow your nose. Come sit down." "No," Caxton answered. "How about this one? I see it's a girl, but why tie her up like a pretzel?" Jubal looked at the replica, caryatid who has fallen under her stone. "I won't expect you to appreciate the masses, which make that figure much more than a pretzel. But you can appreciate what Rodin was saying. What do people get out of looking at a crucifix?" "You know I don't go to church. Still, you must know that representations of the crucifixion are usually atrocious, and ones in churches are the worst. Blood like ketchup, and that ex-carpenter portrayed as if he were a pansy, which he certainly was not. He was a hearty man, muscular and healthy. But a poor portrayal is as effective as a good one for most people. They don't see defects. They see a symbol which inspires their deepest emotions. It recalls to them the agony and sacrifice of God." "Jubal, I thought you weren't a Christian. Does that make me blind to human emotion? The crummiest plaster crucifix can evoke emotions in the human heart so strong that many have died for them. The artistry with which such a symbol is wrought is irrelevant. Here we have another emotional symbol, but wrought with exquisite artistry. Ben, for 3,000 years, architects designed buildings with columns shaped as female figures. At last, Rodin pointed out that this was work too heavy for a girl. He didn't say, 'Look, you jerks, if you must do this, make it a brawny male figure.' No, he showed it. This poor little caryatid has fallen under the load. She's a good girl. Look at her face. Serious, unhappy at a failure, not blaming anyone, not even the gods, and still trying to shoulder her load after she's crumpled under it. But she's more than good art denouncing bad art. She's a symbol for every woman who ever shouldered a load too heavy. But not alone women. This symbol means every man and woman who ever sweated out life in uncomplaining fortitude until they crumpled under their loads. It's courage, Ben, and victory. Victory. Victory and defeat. There is none higher. She didn't give up, Ben. She's still trying to lift that stone after it has crushed her. She's a father working while cancer eats away his insides to bring home one more paycheck. She's a 12-year-old trying to mother her brothers and sisters because Mama had to go to heaven. She's a switchboard operator sticking to a post while smoke chokes her and fire cuts off her escape. She's all the unsung heroes who couldn't make it but never quit. Come, salute as you pass, and come see my little mermaid." Ben took him literally. Jubal made no comment. "Now this," he said, "is one Mike didn't give to me. I haven't told Mike why I got it, since it is self-evident that it's one of the most delightful compositions ever wrought by the eye and hand of man. This one I don't need explained. It's pretty, which is excuse enough, as with kittens and butterflies. But there is more. She's not quite a mermaid, see? Nor is she human. She sits on land, where she has chosen to stay, and stares eternally out to sea, forever lonely for what she left. You know the story?" "Hans Christian Andersen." "Yes. She sits by the haven of Kubenhavn, and she's everybody who ever made a difficult choice. She doesn't regret it, but she must pay for it. Every choice must be paid for. The cost is not only endless homesickness. She can never be quite human. When she uses her dearly bought feet, every step is on sharp knives." "Ben,
I think that Mike walks always on knives. But don't tell him I said so. I won't. I'd rather look at her and not think about knives. She's a little darling, isn't she? How would you like to coax her into bed? She'd be as lively as a seal and as slippery. Cripes, you're an evil old man, Jubal. And getting eviler every year. We won't look at any others. I won't. I'd rather look at her and not think about knives. She's a little darling, isn't she? How would you like to coax her into bed? She'd be as lively as a seal and as slippery. Cripes, you're an evil old man, Jubal. And getting eviler every year. We won't look at any others. I usually ration myself to one a day. Suits. I feel as if I had had three quick drinks. Jubal, why isn't there stuff like this where a person can see it? Because the world has gone nutty, and art always paints the spirit of its times. Rodin died about the time the world started flipping its lid. His successors noted the amazing things he had done with light and shadow and mass and composition, and they copied that part. What they failed to see was that the master told stories that laid bare the human heart. They became contemptuous of painting or sculpture that told stories. They dubbed such work literary. They went all out for abstractions. Jubal shrugged. Abstract design is all right. For wallpaper or linoleum, but art is the process of evoking pity and terror. What modern artists do is pseudo-intellectual masturbation. Creative art is intercourse, in which the artist renders emotional his audience. These laddies who won't deign to do that, or can't, lost the public. The ordinary bloke will not buy art that leaves him unmoved. If he does, the money is conned out of him by taxes or such. Jubal, I've always wondered why I didn't give a hoot for art. I thought it was something missing in me. One does have to learn to look at art. But it's up to the artist to use language that can be understood. Most of these jokers don't want to use language you and I can learn. They would rather sneer because we fail to see what they are driving at, if anything. Obscurity is the refuge of incompetence. Ben, would you call me an artist? Huh? You write a fair stick. Thank you. Artist is a word I avoid for the same reason I hate to be called doctor, but I am an artist. Most of my stuff is worth reading only once, and not even once by a person who knows the little I have to say, but I am an honest artist. What I write is intended to reach the customer, and affect him, if possible, with pity and terror, or at least divert the tedium of his hours. I never hide from him in a private language, nor am I seeking praise from other writers for technique or other balderdash. I want praise from the customer, given in cash, because I've reached him, or I don't want anything. Support for the arts? Mad. A government-supported artist is an incompetent whore. Damn it, you punched one of my buttons. Fill your glass and tell me what's on your mind. Jubal, I'm unhappy. This is news. I've got a fresh set of troubles. Ben frowned. I'm not sure I want to talk about them. Then listen to my troubles. You have troubles? Jubal, I thought you were the one man who had managed to beat the game. Sometime I must tell you about my married life. Yes, I've got troubles. Duke is left. Or did you know? I knew. Larry is a good gardener. But the gadgets that run this Hogan have fallen to pieces. Good mechanics are scarce. Ones that will fit into this household are almost non-existent. I'm limping along on repairmen. Every visit a disturbance, all of them with larceny in their hearts, and most of them can't use a screwdriver without cutting themselves. Nor can I, so I'm at their mercy. My heart aches for you, Jubal. Never mind the sarcasm. Mechanics and gardeners are convenient. Secretaries are essential. Two of mine are pregnant. One is getting married. Caxton looked flabbergasted. Jubal growled, Oh, I'm not telling tales. They're sore because I took you up here without giving them time to boast. So be surprised when they tell you. Which one is getting married? Isn't that obvious? The happy man is that smooth-talking refugee from a sandstorm or a steam water brother Stinky Mahmood. I told him that they have to live here whenever they're in this country. Bastard laughed and pointed out that I had invited him too long ago. Jubal sniffed. Wouldn't be so bad if he would. I might get some work out of her. You probably would. She likes to work. The other two are pregnant. High on a kite. I'm refreshing an OB because they say they're going to have them at home. What a crimp babies will put in my working habits. But why do you assume that neither Turgess and Tummy belongs to the bride? Why, I assume that Stinky was more conventional than that. Or more cautious. Stinky wouldn't be given a ballot. Ben, in all the years I've studied this subject, trying to trace the meanderings of their twisty little minds, the only thing I've learned is that when a gal is gonna, she's gonna. All a man can do is cooperate with the inevitable. Well, which one isn't getting married or anything? Miriam or Anne? Hold it, I didn't say the bride was pregnant. And you seem to be thinking that Dorcas is the prospective bride. It's Miriam who is studying Arabic. Huh? I'm a cross-eyed baboon. Obviously. But Miriam was always snapping at Stinky. And they trust you with the newspaper column. Ever watch a bunch of sixth graders? Yes, but Dorcas did everything but a notch dance. That is Dorcas's natural behavior. Be sure that when Miriam shows you her ring, size of a roc's egg and about as scarce, act surprised. I'm damned if I'll sort out which are spawning. Just remember that they are pleased, which is why I tipped you off so that you wouldn't think they thought they were caught. They don't. They weren't. They're smug. Jubal sighed. I'm too old to enjoy the patter of little feet, but I won't lose perfect secretaries and kids that I love for any reason if I can induce them to stay. This household has become steadily disorganized ever since Jill kicked Mike's feet out from under him. Not that I blame her, and I don't think you do either. No, but... Jubal, are you under the impression that Jill started Mike on his merry rounds? Huh? Jubal looks startled. Then who was it? Don't be nosy, bub. However, Jill straightened me out when I jumped to the same conclusion. As I understand it, which one scored first was more or less chance. Hmm. Yes, I believe so. Jill thinks so. She thinks Mike was lucky in happening to seduce or be seduced by the one best fitted to start him off right. Which gives you a hint if you know how Jill's mind works. Hell, I don't even know how mine works. As for Jill, I would never have expected her to take up preaching, no matter how love-struck she was. So I don't know how her mind works. She doesn't preach much. We'll get to that. Jubal, what do you read from the calendar? Huh? You think Mike did it, in both cases, if his visits home match up? Jubal said guardedly. Ben, I've said nothing to lead you to think so. The hell you haven't. You said they were smug. I know the effect that goddamn Superman has on women. Hold it, son. He's our water brother. Ben said levelly. I know it. And I love him, too. But that's all the more reason I understand why they are smug. Jubal stared at his glass. Ben, seems to me your name could be on the list easier than Mike's. Jubal, you're out of your mind. Take it easy. While I really do, so help me by all the billion names of God, believe in not poking my nose into other people's business. Nevertheless, I have normal eyesight and hearing. If a brass band parades through my home, I notice. You slept under this roof dozens of times. Did you ever sleep alone? Why, you scoundrel. I slept alone the first night I was here. Dorcas must have been off her feed. No, you were under sedative that night. Doesn't count. Some other night? Your question is irrelevant, immaterial, and beneath my notice. That's an answer. Please note that the added bedrooms are as far from mine as possible. Soundproofing is never perfect. Jubal, wouldn't your name be higher up that list than mine? What? Not to mention Larry and... Jubal, everybody assumes that you are keeping the fanciest harem since the Sultan. Don't misunderstand me. They envy you. But they think you're a lecherous old goat. Jubal drummed on his chair arm. Ben, I do not mind being treated flippantly by my juniors. But in this matter, I insist that my years be treated with respect. Sorry, Ben said stiffly. I thought if it was all right for you to kick my sex life around, you would not mind my being equally frank. No, no, Ben, you misunderstand. I require the girls to treat me with respect on this subject. Oh, I am, as you pointed out, old. Quite old. Privately, I am happy to say that I am still lecherous. But lechery does not command me. I prefer dignity to indulging in pastimes, which, believe me, I have enjoyed in full measure and do not need to repeat. Ben, a man my age, who looks like a slum clearance in its grimmest stage, can bed a young girl, and possibly bigger, and thanks for the compliment, it might not be amiss, through three means. Money, or the equivalent in terms of wills and community property and such. And, pause for a question, can you imagine any of these four bedding with a man for those reasons? No, not any of them. Thank you, sir. I associate only with ladies. I'm pleased that you know it. The third incentive is a most female one. A sweet young girl sometimes takes an old wreck to bed because she is fond of him, sorry for him, and wishes to make him happy. Would that apply? Jubal, it might, with any of them. I think so, too. But this reason, which any of these ladies might find sufficient, is not sufficient for me. I have my dignity, sir, so please take my name off the list. Caxton grinned. Okay, you stiff-necked old coot. I hope that when I am your age, I won't be so hard to tempt. Jubal smiled. Better to be tempted and resist than be disappointed. Now about Duke and Larry, I don't know, nor care. Whenever anyone comes here to live, I make it plain that this is neither a sweatshop nor a whorehouse, but a home, and as such it combines anarchy and tyranny without a trace of democracy as in any well-run family, i.e., they are on their own except where I give orders, which orders are not subject to debate. My tyranny never extends to love life. The kids have always kept their private matters reasonably private. At least, Jubal smiled ruefully, until the Martian influence got out of hand. Perhaps Duke and Larry have been dragging the gals behind every bush, but there have been no screams. Then you think it's Mike? Jubal scowled. Yes. That's all right. I told you the girls were smugly happy. And I'm not broke, plus the fact that I could bleed Mike for any amount their babies won't lack. But, Ben, I'm troubled about Mike himself. So am I, Jubal. And about Jill. Jubal, Jill isn't the problem. It's Mike. Damn it, why can't the boy come home and quit this obscene pulpit pounding? Jubal, that's not quite what he's doing. Ben added, I've just come from there. Huh? Why didn't you say so? Ben sighed. First you talked art, then you sang the blues, then you wanted to gossip. You have the floor. Coming back from the Cape Town conference, I visited them. What I saw worried the hell out of me, so I stopped by my office, then came here. Jubal, couldn't you rig it with Douglas to close down this operation? Jubal shook his head. What Mike does with his life is his business. You would if you had seen what I saw. Not I. But in the second place, I can't. Nor can Douglas. Jubal, Mike would accept any decision you made about his money. He probably wouldn't even understand it. Ah, but he would. Ben, recently Mike made his will and sent it to me to criticize. It was one of the shrewdest documents I've ever seen. He recognized that he had more wealth than his heirs could use, so he used part of his money to guard the rest. It is booby-trapped not only against heirs' claimants of both his legal and natural parents, he knows he's a bastard, though I don't know how he found out, but also of every member of the envoy's company. He provided a way to settle out of court with any heir having a prima facie claim, and rigged it so that they would almost have to overthrow the government to break his will. The will showed that he knew every security and asset. I couldn't find anything to criticize. Including, Jubal thought, his provision for you, my brother. Don't tell me that I could rig his money. Ben looked morose. I wish you could. I don't. But it wouldn't help if we could. Mike hasn't drawn a dollar from his account for almost a year. Douglas called me about it. Mike hadn't answered his letters. No withdrawals? Jubilee's spending a lot. Maybe the church racket pays well. That's the odd part. It's not really a church. What is it? Primarily a language school. Repeat. To teach the Martian language. Well, then I wish he wouldn't call it a church. Maybe it is a church within the legal definition. Look, Ben, a skating rink is a church as long as some sect claims that skating is essential to worship, or even that skating served a desirable function. If you can sing to the glory of God, you can skate to the same end. There are temples in Malaya which are nothing to an outsider but boarding houses for snakes. But the same high court rules them to be churches as protects our own sects. Well, Mike raises snakes, too. Jubal, isn't anything ruled out? A moot point. A church usually can't charge for fortune-telling or calling up spirits of the dead, but it can accept offerings and let the offerings be fees, in fact. Human sacrifice is illegal, but it is done in several spots around the globe, probably right here in this former land of the free. The way to do anything that would otherwise be suppressed is to do it in the inner sanctum and keep the Gentiles out. Why, Ben? Is Mike doing something that might get him jailed? Probably not. Well, if he's careful. The Fostrites have shown how to get by with almost anything, much more than Joseph Smith was lynched for. Mike has lifted a lot from the Fosterites. That's part of what worries me. But what does worry you? Jubal, this is a Water Brother matter. Shall I carry poison in a hollow tooth? The inner circle are supposed to be able to discorporate voluntarily. No poison needed. I never got that far, Ben. But I know ways to put up the only final defense. Let's have it. Jubal, I said Mike raises snakes. I meant figuratively and literally. The setup is a snake pit. Unhealthy. Mike's temple is a big place, an auditorium for public meetings, smaller ones for invitational meetings, many smaller rooms, and living quarters. Jill sent me a radiogram telling me where to go, so I was dropped at the private entrance on the back street. Quarters are above the auditorium, as private as you can be and still live in a city. Jubal nodded. Be your acts legal or illegal, nosy neighbors are noxious. In this case, a very good idea. Outer doors let me in. I suppose I was scanned, although I didn't spot the scanner. Through two more automatic doors, then up a bounce tube. Jubal, it wasn't an ordinary one, not controlled by the passenger, but by someone out of sight. Didn't feel like the usual bounce tube, either. I have never used them, and never shall, Jubal said firmly. You wouldn't have minded this. I floated up gently as a feather. Ben, I don't trust machinery. It bites. Jubal added, however, Mike's mother was one of the great engineers, and his father, his real father, was a competent engineer, or better. If Mike has improved bounce tubes until they are fit for humans, we ought not to be surprised. As may be. I got to the top and landed without having to grab for it or depend on safety nets. Didn't see any, to tell the truth. Through more automatic doors and into an enormous living room, oddly furnished and rather austere. Jubal, people think you run an odd household. Nonsense, just plain and comfortable. Well, your ménage is Aunt Jane's finishing school compared with Mike's weirdy. I'm just inside the joint when the first thing I see, I don't believe, a babe tattooed from chin to toes and not a goddamn stitch on. Hell, she was tattooed everywhere. Fantastic. You're a big city bumpkin, Ben. I knew a tattooed lady once. Very nice girl. Well, Ben conceded. This gal is nice, too, once you get adjusted to her pictorial supplement, and the fact that she usually has a snake with her. I was wondering if it was the same woman. Fully tattooed women are scarce, but the lady I knew 30 years back had the usual vulgar fear of snakes. However, I'm fond of snakes. I look forward to meeting your friend. You will when you visit Mike. She's sort of a major domo for him. Patricia, but called Pat or Patty. Oh, yes. Jill thinks highly of her. Never mentioned her tattoos, however. But she's nearly the age to be your friend. When I said babe, I was giving a first impression. She looks to be in her 20s. She claims her oldest child is that old. Anyhow, she trotted up, all big smile, put her arms around me, and kissed me. You're Ben. Welcome, brother. I give you water. Jubal, I've been in the newspaper racket for years. I've been around. But I have never been kissed by a strange babe dressed only in tattoos. I was embarrassed. Poor Ben. Damn it, you would have felt the same way. No, remember, I've met one tattooed lady. They feel dressed in those tattoos. Or at least this was true of my friend Sadako. Japanese she was. But Japanese are not body conscious the way we are. Well, Ben answered. Pat isn't body conscious, just about her tattoos. She wants to be stuffed and mounted nude when she dies as a tribute to George.
George?
Sorry, her husband. Up in heaven, to my relief, although she talked as if he had just slipped out for a beer. But essentially, Pat is a lady, and she didn't let me stay embarrassed.
Chapter 31. Patricia Pywonski gave Ben Caxton the all-out kiss of brotherhood before he knew what hit him. She felt his unease and was surprised. Mike had told her to expect him and placed Ben's face in her mind. She knew that Ben was a brother in all fullness of the inner nest. And Jill was grown closer with Ben, second only to that with Michael. But Patricia's nature was an endless wish to make other people as happy as she was. She slowed down. She invited Ben to get rid of his clothes, but did not press the matter, except to ask him to remove his shoes. The nest was soft and clean, as only Michael's powers could keep things clean. She showed him where to hang clothes and hurried to fetch him a drink. She knew his preferences from Jill and decided on a double martini. The poor dear looked tired. When she came back with drinks, Ben was barefooted and had removed his jacket.
Brother, may you never thirst.
We share water. He agreed and drank.
There's mighty little water in that.
Enough, she answered. Michael says that water could be in the thought. It is the sharing. I grok he speaks rightly.
I grok. And just what I needed. Thanks, Patty.
Ours is yours, and you are ours. We're glad you're home. The others are at services or teaching. There's no hurry. They will come when waiting is filled. Would you like to look around your nest?
Ben let her lead him on a tour. A huge kitchen with a bar at one end, a library even more loaded than Jubal's, bathrooms ample and luxurious, bedrooms. Ben decided that they must be bedrooms, although they contained no beds, but simply floors that were even softer than elsewhere. Patty called them little nests and showed him the one she usually slept in. It had been fitted on one side for her snakes. Ben suppressed his queasiness until he came to cobras.
It's all right, she assured him. We did have glass in front of them, but Michael has taught them that they must not come past this line.
I would rather trust glass.
Okay, Ben.
She lowered a glass barrier. He felt relieved and managed to stroke Honeybun when invited to. Then Pat showed him one other room. It was very large, circular, had a floor as cushiony as the bedrooms. Its center was a round swimming pool.
This, she told him, is the innermost temple where we receive new brothers into the nest.
She dabbled a foot in water.
Want to share water and grow closer? Or maybe just swim?
Not right now.
Waiting is, she agreed.
They returned to the huge living room, and Patricia went to get him another drink. Ben settled himself on a big couch, then got up. The place was warm. That drink was making him sweat, and a couch that adjusted to his contours made him hotter. He decided it was silly to dress the way he would in Washington, with Patty decked out in nothing but a bull snake she had left around her shoulders. He compromised on jockey shorts and hung the rest in the foyer. Then he noticed a sign on the entrance door.
Did you remember to dress?
He decided that in this household, the warning might be necessary. He saw nothing else that he had missed on coming in. On each side of the door was a huge brass bowl filled with money. More than filled. Federation notes of various denominations spilled out on the floor. He was staring at this when Patricia returned.
Here's your drink, Brother Ben. Grow close in happiness.
Thanks.
His eyes returned to the money. She followed his glance. I'm a sloppy housekeeper, Ben. Michael makes it so easy, cleaning and such, that I forget. She retrieved the money, stuffed it into the less crowded bowl.
Patty, why in the world?
Oh, we keep it here because this door leads to the street. If one of us is leaving the nest, and I do myself almost every day for grocery shopping, we may need money. We keep it where you won't forget to take some.
Just grab a handful and go?
Why, yes, dear.
Oh, I see what you mean. There is never anyone here but us. If we have friends outside, and all of us do, there are rooms lower down, the sort outsiders are used to where we visit. This isn't where it can tempt a weak person.
Huh.
I'm pretty weak myself. She chuckled. How can it tempt you when it's yours? How about burglars? He tried to guess how much money those bowls contained. Most of the notes seemed to be larger than singles. Hell, he could see one with 3 zeros on the floor. Patty had missed it. One did get in last week. So, how much did he steal?
Oh, he didn't. Michael sent him away.
Called the cops?
Oh, no.
Michael would never turn anybody over to cops. Michael just... She shrugged. Made him go away. Then Duke fixed the hole in the skylight in the garden room.
Did I show you that? It's lovely. A grass floor.
You have a grass floor, Jill told me. That's where Michael first saw one.
Is it grass all over?
Just my living room.
If I ever get to Washington, can I walk on it? Lie down on it, please?
Of course, Patty. It's yours. I know, dear, but it is good to ask.
I'll lie on it and feel the grass against me and be filled with happiness to be in my brother's little nest.
You're most welcome, Patty.
He hoped she would leave her snakes behind.
When will you be there?
I don't know, when waiting is filled. Maybe Michael knows.
Well, warn me if possible, so I'll be in town. If not, Jill always knows my door code.
Patty, doesn't anybody keep track of this money? What for, Ben?
People usually do.
We don't. Just help yourself, then put back any you have left when you come home, if you remember. Michael told me to keep the grouch bag filled. If it runs low, I get more from him.
Ben dropped the matter, stunkered by its simplicity. He had some idea of the moneyless communism of Martian culture. He could see that Mike had set up an enclave of it here. These bowls marked transition from Martian to Terran economy. He wondered if Patty knew that it was fake, propped up by Mike's wealth. Patty, how many are there in the nest? He felt a mild worry, then shoved back the thought. Why would they sponge on him? He didn't have pots of gold inside his door.
Let me see. Almost 20, counting novitiate brothers who don't think in Martian yet and aren't ordained.
Are you ordained, Patty?
Oh, yes. Mostly I teach. Beginner's classes in Martian, and I help novitiates and such. And Dawn and Jill are high priestesses. Dawn and I are pretty well-known Fosterites, so we work together to show other Fosterites that the Church of All World doesn't conflict with the faith any more than being a Baptist keeps a man from joining the Masons.
She showed Ben Foster's kiss, explained it, and showed him its miraculous companion placed by Mike.
They know what Foster's kiss means and how hard it is to win it, and they've seen some of Mike's miracles and are about ripe to buckle down and climb into a higher circle.
It's an effort.
Of course, Ben. For them. In your case and mine, and Jill's and a few others, Michael called us straight into brotherhood. But to others, Michael first teaches a discipline. Not a faith, but a way to realize faith in works. That means they've got to learn Martian. That's not easy. I'm not perfect in it. But it is happiness to work and learn. You asked about the nest. Let me see. Duke and Jill and Michael. 2 Fosterites, Dawn and myself. 1 circumcised Jew and his wife and 4 children.
Kids in the nest?
Oh, lots of them. In the nestling's nest, just off of here. Nobody could meditate with kids hollering and raising Ned. Want to see it?
Later.
1 Catholic couple with a little boy. Excommunicated, I'm sorry to say. Their priest found out. Michael had to give them special help. It was a nasty shock, and utterly unnecessary. They were getting up early every Sunday to go to Mass as usual. But kids will talk. 1 Mormon family of the new schism. That's 3 more, and their kids. The rest are Protestants, and 1 atheist. That is, he thought he was until Michael opened his eyes. He came here to scoff. He stayed to learn. He'll be a priest soon. 19 grown-ups. But we're hardly ever all in the nest at once, except for our own services in the innermost temple. The nest is built to hold 81, 3 filled. But Michael Grock's much waiting before we need a bigger nest, and by then we will build other nests. Ben, would you like to see an outer service? See how Michael makes the pitch? Michael is preaching now.
Why, yes, if it's not too much trouble.
Good. Just a sec, dearie, while I get decent. Jubal, she came back in a robe like Anne's witness robe, but with angel wing sleeves and a high neck and the trademark Mike uses, 9 concentric circles and a conventionalized sun over her heart. This getup was vestments. Jill and the other priestesses wear the same, except that Patty's was high-necked to cover her cartoons. She had put on socks and was carrying sandals. Changed the hell out of her, Jubal. It gave her great dignity. I could see she was older than I had guessed, although not within years of what she claims. She has an exquisite complexion. A shame ever to tattoo such skin. I addressed again. She asked me to carry my shoes and led me back through the nest and out into the corridor. We stopped to put on shoes and took a ramp that wound down a couple of floors. We reached a gallery overlooking the main auditorium. Mike was on the platform. No pulpit, just a lecture hall with a big all-world symbol on the back wall. A priestess was with him, and at that distance I thought it was Jill. But it was the other high priestess, Dawn. Dawn Ardent.
What was that name?
Dawn Ardent. Nay Higgins, if you want to be fussy.
I've met her.
I know you have, you allegedly retired goat. She's got a crush on you. Jubal shook his head.
The Dawn Ardent, I mean, I just barely met 2 years ago. She wouldn't remember me.
She remembers you. She gets every one of your pieces of commercial cred on tape under every pseudonym she can track down. She goes to sleep by them. They give her beautiful dreams, she says. But they all know you, Jubal. That living room has exactly one ornament, a life-sized color solly of your head. Looks as if you'd been decapitated with your face in a hideous grin. A shot Duke sneaked of you.
Why, that brat.
Jill asked him to.
Double brat.
Mike put her up to it. Brace yourself, Jubal. You are the patron saint of the Church of All Worlds. Jubal looked horrified.
They can't do that.
They already have. Mike gives you credit for having started the whole show by explaining things so well that he was able to figure out how to put over Martian theology to humans. Jubal groaned. Ben went on. In addition, Dawn thinks you're beautiful. Aside from that quirk, she is intelligent and utterly charming. But I digress. Mike spotted us and called out, "Hi, Ben, later," and went on with his spiel. Jubal, you'll have to hear it. He didn't sound preachy and didn't wear robes, just a smart, well-tailored white suit. He sounded like a damned good car salesman. He cracked jokes and told parables. The gist was a sort of pantheism. One parable was the oldie about the earthworm burrowing through the soil who encounters another earthworm and says, "Oh, you're beautiful, will you marry me?" And is answered, "Don't be silly, I'm your other end." You've heard it?
Heard it. I wrote it.
Hadn't realized it was that old. Mike made good use of it. His idea is that whenever you encounter any other grokking thing, man, woman, or stray cat, you are meeting your other end. The universe is a thing we whipped up among us and agreed to forget the gag. Jubal looked sour.
Solipsism and pantheism. Together they explain anything, cancel out any inconvenient fact, reconcile all theories, include any facts or delusions you like. But it's cotton candy, all taste and no substance. As unsatisfactory as solving a story by saying, "Then the little boy fell out of bed and woke up." Don't crab at me, take it up with Mike.
Believe me, he made it convincing. Once he stopped and said, "You must be tired of so much talk." And they yelled back, "No!" He really had them. He protested that his voice was tired, and anyhow it was time for miracles. Then he did amazing sleight of hand. Did you know he had been a magician in a carnival?
I knew he had been with it. He never told me the nature of his shame.
He's a crackerjack. He did stunts that had me fooled. But it would have been okay if he had just used kid tricks. It was his patter that had them spellbound. Finally, he stopped and said, "The man from Mars is expected to do wonderful things, so I pass some miracles each meeting. I can't help being the man from Mars. It's just something that happened." Miracles can happen for you, if you want them. However, for anything more than these narrow-gauge miracles, you must enter the circle. Those who want to learn, I will see you later. Cards are being passed around. Patty explained it. "This crowd is just marks, dear. People here out of curiosity, or maybe shilled in by people who have reached one of the inner circles. Jubal, Mike has rigged the thing in 9 circles, like lodge degrees, and nobody is told that there are circles farther in until they're ripe for it. This is Michael's bally, Pat told me, which he does as easy as he breathes, while he's feeling them out and deciding which ones are possible. That's why he strings it out. Duke is up behind that grill, and Michael tells him who might measure up, where he sits and everything. Michael's about to turn this tip and spill the ones he doesn't want. Then Dawn takes over, after she gets the seating diagram from Duke.
How did they work that? Asked Harshaw.
I didn't see it, Jubal. There are a dozen ways they could cut from the herd, as long as Mike knew which they were, and had some way to signal Duke. Patty says Mike's clairvoyant. I won't deny the possibility. Then they took the collection. Mike doesn't do even this church style, you know, soft music and dignified ushers. He said nobody would believe this was a church if he didn't take a collection. Then, so help me. They passed collection baskets already loaded with money, and Mike told them that this was what the last crowd had given, so help themselves if they were broke or hungry and needed it. But if they felt like giving, give. Do one or the other. Put something in or take something out. I figured he had found one more way to get rid of too much money. Jubal said thoughtfully,
that pitch, properly given, should result in people giving more, while a few just take a little. Probably very few.
I don't know, Jubal. Patty whisked me away when Mike turned the service over to Dawn. She took me to a private auditorium where services were opening for the Seventh Circle, people who had belonged for months and had made progress. If it is progress. Jubal, we went straight from one to the other, and it was hard to adjust. That outer meeting was half lecture, half entertainment. This one was almost a voodoo rite. Mike was in robes now. He looked taller, ascetic, and intense. His eyes gleamed. The place was dim. There was creepy music. And yet it made you want to dance. Patty and I took a couch that was darn near a bed. What the service was, I couldn't say. Mike would sing out in Martian. They would answer in Martian. Except for chants of thou art God, echoed by some Martian word that would make my throat sore to pronounce it. Jubal made a croaking noise.
Was that it?
Huh? I believe so, Jubal. Are you hooked? Have you been stringing me along?
No, Stinky taught it to me. He says it's heresy of the blackest sort. By his lights, I mean. It's the word Mike translates as thou art God. Mahmood says that isn't even close to a translation. It's the universe proclaiming its self-awareness. Or it's peccavimus, with the total absence of contrition. Or a dozen other things. Stinky says that he doesn't understand it even in Martian, except that it's a bad word, the worst possible in his opinion, and closer to Satan's defiance than to the blessing of God. Go on. Was that all? Just a bunch of fanatics yelling Martian? Jubal, they didn't yell, and it wasn't fanatical. Sometimes they barely whispered. Then it might climb a little. They did it in a rhythm, a pattern, like a cantata. Yet it didn't feel rehearsed. It felt more as if they were all one person, humming whatever he felt. Jubal, you've seen Fosterites work themselves up. Too much, I'm sorry to say.
Well, this was not that sort of frenzy. This was quiet and easy, like dropping off to sleep. It was intense, all right, and got steadily more so, but... Jubal, ever try a spiritualist seance?
I have. I've tried everything I could, Ben.
Then you know how tension can grow without anybody moving or saying a word. This was more like that than like a revival, or even the most sedate church service. But it wasn't mild. It packed terrific wallop.
The word is Apollonian,
huh?
As opposed to Dionysian.
People simplify Apollonian into mild and calm and cool.
But Apollonian and Dionysian are two sides of one coin. A nun kneeling in a cell, holding perfectly still, can be in ecstasy more frenzied than any priestess of Pan Priapus celebrating the vernal equinox. Ecstasy is in the skull, not the setting up exercises.
Jubal frowned.
Another error is to identify Apollonian with good, merely because our most respectable sects are Apollonian in ritual and precept. Mere prejudice.
Proceed. Well, things weren't as quiet as a nun's devotions. They wandered about, swapped seats, and there was necking going on. Nothing more, I believe, but the lighting was low. One gal started to join us, but Patty gave her some sign, so she kissed us and left. Ben grinned. Kissed quite well, too. I was the only person not in a robe. I felt conspicuous, but she didn't seem to notice. The whole thing was casual, and yet as coordinated as a ballerina's muscles. Mike kept busy, sometimes in front, sometimes wandering among the others. Once he squeezed my shoulder and kissed Patty, unhurriedly but quickly. He didn't speak. Back of where he stood, when he seemed to be leading, was a dingus like a big stereo tank. He used it for miracles, only he never used the word, at least not in English. Jubal, every church promises miracles, but it's jam yesterday and jam tomorrow.
Exception, Jubal interrupted. Many of them deliver. Exempli gratis.